This is the May 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Mike Zuzlow of GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, and Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net. He's in Barrington, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the program anytime you'd like on our website. Just click and play from willag.org. You'll also find there information from the Agricultural Economist, the Farm Doc team, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, along with the daily closing market report and other market and weather information. It's all at willag.org, or search out Commodity Week as a podcast in your favorite podcast application. Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net, let's begin with you today. I'd like to start with the export market for corn and soybeans both, but particularly for corn. USDA dropping in the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. The export figure by 75 million bushels. I think that's the second time they've done it in this calendar year. I don't know how much it's dropped because I haven't calculated from the beginning of the marketing year, but it's off substantially. First, are we likely to make the export goal USDA has at this point by the time we get to the fall or the end of the marketing year for old crop? And then we'll come back and talk about some of the reasons why or why not that might be the case.
Well, right now, if you look at where they're at, they did make the cut because we are not where we need to be. You throw in some China cancellations. We've had more China cancellations, Todd. And the reality is we are still behind the curve of what we need to sell to hit the USDA's goal. So unless something changes dramatically and we really start ramping up sales, and I unfortunately just don't see it with the stronger dollar, with a decent crop coming out of Brazil, the odds are, unfortunately, they're probably going to have to cut that export number a little bit more as we get further into the summertime.
What's the elevator system that belongs to JSA telling you about the availability of old crop, though, domestically? Is it in farmers' hands? Is there supply enough? And is it just the export market that has caused this problem, along with a big crop that is in the field now and expected to come in the fall?
Well, it's a kind of a combination of things. Like, the river market's really weak due to the lack of exports right now. You're asking who has the grain? I think in general, the bias we're heard in our industry is the farmers, especially in the eastern Illinois, especially Illinois specifically, but in the eastern Midwest, they were relatively aggressive moving corn earlier this year, right out of the field, early winter. They had a fabulous price. They had good yields, and they were willing to take that corn. And we actually, Todd, shipped a lot of corn out of Illinois down to Kansas into those feed yards. Where the corn market, where the corn is probably being held a little bit tighter by the producer, is actually in the Western Corn Belt, because they had such crummy crops. Their producers were really, really bulled up. They're the ones that are holding on very tight-fisted right now, worried about next year's crops. So if there's an area in the country that's got a little bit more excess supply than maybe other parts of the country, I would argue it's the Western Corn Belt, interesting enough, which would be kind of seem unlocked. You know, when you think of where the shortage of the crop was, it was in the West, so in production wise. So it is kind of interesting, but that's kind of what we're hearing.
If that is the case, will basis be enough to make up for the losses in the futures markets, given that they've been holding on for such a long time there?
Well, that's where it's going to be. The basis is going to try pulling it out. We've heard some decent basis bids here and there across the Midwest. So what they'll do is the basis will firm up, Todd. The other thing, although you're not seeing it recently, is you might see the bull spreads kind of work back in. That July SEP spread, the July trip trading a premium over September, pushed out to 82.5 cents just a few days ago. It's in a hard correction right now after that bearish report. It's now down to about 58.5, 59 cents. But what you might see as we get into the latter part of the season, they'll start bringing that spread back up. And July will start trading at a huge premium to September, maybe as much as a dollar. In essence, telling the producer, if you don't bring me this grain by middle part of summer, I'm going to penalize you hard if you store it into September, because reality is by September, we'll probably have that early harvest of corn starting to go on. So that's how they'll try to fry out of their hands, a little bit of basis improvement and potentially a little bit more aggressive bull spreading.
And if the crop looks normal or decent, go ahead and do that, I assume.
Exactly. I mean, right now, I think you got to be a little bit aggressive in selling grain. I mean, I think we have odds are, Todd, we will get some of a bounce after this really hard down move we've seen recently. But the reality is the world supplies are building. The Brazilian crop looks like it's going to be a pretty big crop. And the demand's just not there on the export market. So rallies, in our opinion, are definitely meant to be sold.
Is China canceling because they want a lower price on the Brazilian crop that's yet to be harvested, or are they canceling because they have less demand at this point?
I think it's a combination of both. I think we've seen some arguments that China is, the export anticipation to China on soybeans may be a little bit too high. I think it's the same thing on the corn. The reality is, Todd, China's economy just has not snapped back out of COVID like it did in the United States. And when we came out of COVID in the US, we had this huge economic surge. China just hasn't seen it. So you're seeing a lack of demand due to not as robust economy in China. Then on top of it, the reality is South America is much more competitively priced with us, especially in the corn. Remember, up until late last year, China was not able to import corn from the, excuse me, China was not able to import corn from South America due to phytosanitary restrictions. That's all been dealt with. Now they're able to import corn from Brazil, and they're doing it very aggressively.
Will they import more corn from Ukraine, Russia, as or at least the Black Sea area, as that's been extended through July 18 now for the corridor to stay open?
They should. I mean, I think they will. I was looking for, I was a little bit surprised they kept the corridor open. I thought, there's a shot that Putin would close that corridor due to the fact that the Chinese now could get corn instead of from the Ukraine. They could buy it from the Brazilians. He did choose to get the corridor open. I believe it was more politics. Erdogan had that election over the weekend. He was not elected. It's in a runoff. I think Putin was doing a little bit of favor to Erdogan. He likes him, and he wants to keep him in power. It makes Erdogan look like a very powerful figure getting this thing extended. But the reality is China's going to buy corn from whoever they can get it the cheapest from.
What do we know about the rest of the crops in the Northern Hemisphere, in particular the wheat crop? Not a good one in the United States. And I did hear the U.S. import wheat from Europe too.
There was a report that we imported wheat from Poland, believe it or not, into the southeast. They said it was cheaper to get it in from Poland and in from the southeast, rail it in. So yeah, there are reports of that. Overall, that Kansas City wheat crop is really, really in tough shape. I've talked to some producers out there today. I've talked to some feedlots out there today. They say that this crop, the government has not got a handle on it. It is going to get smaller. There is not going to be a lot of hard red wheat out there. That might allow some of the feed, corn maybe to continue to work its way into the feed rations out west, simply because they're not going to be able to switch over to wheat. There just isn't the supply to feed the livestock.
Where do you stand on the corn market at this level? Is it neutral, friendly, bearish still? Where do you put yourself?
I would say it's more neutral because I think we're technically oversold. It's only the third week of May. We've got a long way to go. They're still struggling a little bit to crop in the northern part of the country, planted some parts of the east. We're making progress, but we've broken pretty hard for a crop that's not even out of the ground for the most part. Okay, Todd. So I do anticipate somewhat of a dead cat bounce. It would not be unusual to see at least a 50-cent bounce between here and say mid-June to late June. But that being said, I don't think we're going to see a huge adjustment in acres. The government's at 92. Let's say they drop it to 91. It's not going to be a huge adjustment yield-wise. We are moving into El Nino very, very fast. Some models say we're here already, but we're essentially going to have an El Nino summer. Statistically speaking, when we have an El Nino summer, I believe 14 out of 17 years, we ended up with trend plus yield. Trend this year is 181 and a half bushels. 5 bushels better than we've ever had before. So the odds are with El Nino statistics, we are going to have a very big crop. That's going to keep that carryout potentially between 2.1 to 2.2 billion bushels. Don't get caught up in the billion bushel number, Todd. What you need to get caught up is the stocks to use. That's around a 15% stocks to use. And what I think is so critical about that is the last time we had stocks to use that high or somewhere in that range in 2019, we had a stocks to use at 13. We ended up at a stocks to use at 13.7%. Seasonal average cash price, 356. 2018, stocks use ended up at 15.5, 361 was the seasonal price. 2017, 14.5% stocks use, seasonal average price, 336. 2016, 15.7% stocks use, we ended up at 336 seasonal price. And in 2015, 12.7% stocks use 361 seasonal average price. So you can see when you get these stocks to use up toward 13, 14, 15%, you're looking at seasonal prices a lot lower than they are now. Now, I don't think we're going to average in the mid threes in the seasonal price tab because we got higher pricing at $6 earlier this year. But I think in the long run, that number suggests to me that we're going to see corn trading probably near the low fours or maybe even potentially below four, definitely in the cash market, if we're looking at a 2.1, 2.2 billion carryout going into the fall.
Yeah, the new plateau midpoint, I think, is like 461, according to the FarmDoc Ag Economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, with a trading range, if you just want to extend it a dollar on either side, say 360 to 560, and if you're above or below that, things are really either good or really, really bad, one of the two. Is there anything else before I let you go?
You get to 535, 550. The one thing, if you got bends, it ain't going to be quite as bloody because the cost of money, you know, reality is storage is roughly 11 cents a month is what the cost of storage is, okay? If you get the elevators to give you 85% of the full storage, roughly 65 cents feet, you'll essentially collect roughly 65 cents storing that corn into July. So if you can get a 535 decent corn average price, you use your bins, you get the grain sold, and then you merchandise it like an elevator, you can add 65 cents to that additional hedge. You will have moved your hedge from a 535 December corn price to close to a $6 July delivery price. So there's an opportunity to get a higher price, but you got to get that corn sold around that, you know, the first time around to take advantage of the carry and the roll potential.
Hey, thank you much, Jim.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
Jim McCormick is with agmarket.net. Mike Zuzulo, globalcomresearch.com. We'll begin here. Let's talk about some things that have been happening on the world stage. Begin with the debt ceiling and the United States potentially not being able to meet its obligations as it relates to loans. What impact does that have and how worrisome should it be to a farmer?
Well, the expectations right now, Todd, by both leaders of Congress are that we are going to see them sign something short term next week. And as a result of that, I think we've seen the dollar really pick up a lot of short covering and maybe bring into some new longs as well. Along with that, the equities markets have been able to go higher, especially the Dow and the S&P 500. So I think we are really kind of priming the pump, and expectations are getting greater and greater that a deal will be struck and no default will happen. I think that is where the biggest risk maybe lies, is if something would go wrong, we didn't get things settled. A general risk-off mindset could really hit, especially the dollar and especially the equities, and they pull out that premium. How the grains react to that is a big question mark, given the fall that we've had here in the prices. And so I think it would be mostly neutral for the grain complex. And in fact, if the soybeans would see the Brazilian currency rally and the Chinese currency rally as a result of the dollar breaking on no debt deal, that actually may bring in a lot of short covering potential in the soy complex in particular. I think those are two big features right now, especially the Chinese currency hitting a six-month low, the copper hitting a six-month low. This relates to that strengthening dollar and that strengthening equity market, and I think money moving because they think the debt deal is going to get done.
Let's talk a little bit about that. The dollar was on the list of things that you and I were going to discuss along with the yuan and maybe potentially the ruble. But let's stay with the deal that, and I think this is why you brought it up, the relationship that China has with Brazil and trading in not the dollar as the currency. Why does that mean there might be some short covering in the marketplace? And am I right that those two are related to what you were discussing?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think that the bilateral trade, China and Brazil, that's starting to form here is a new dynamic that we're going to have to get used to trading. We're not used to this at this point. And so we'll have to see how much Brazil loses to the United States if indeed we do see the dollar weakened to the real. I think more importantly is the offshore Chinese yuan. And if that would start to strengthen, then their buying power would go up. I think the biggest thing right now, Todd, when it comes to China, especially related to the corn cancellations we've seen of late, is why are they doing that? And I think that's the biggest issue, that the currencies are playing a role in it, but I can't really see yet exactly how much of a role they're actually playing. And so I'm going to stick with the soybeans as far as being my currency leader, and then, take a look at the corn and what China's demand is actually going to be, if we would see the dollar lose its value as a result of no debt deal being done next week.
Other than the currency and the exchange rates, is there something fundamentally inside of China that is causing an issue, or are they just looking for a cheaper price on the world marketplace?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I would put it right now that 80% would be that the Chinese can find cheaper supplies, especially cheaper wheat supplies, cheaper in both price and also in freight. Australia is the big nuisance, if you will, and competitor we have right now in not just the Chinese market, but the whole Asian market. Russia is right there next to them. I think 20% of the way the Chinese are acting right now is definitely, in my mind, due to their economy, and it could be more than that. This week gave us a lot of data, and I think it's no coincidence that the copper is on a 6-month low, the Chinese currency offshore is on a 6-month low, after we saw the industrial output by China come in half of what the estimates were. We saw their retail sales come in higher and higher by double digits, but still missing trade estimates. And so I think it's very simply put, the trade is having to deal with the realization they're not coming out of the zero COVID policies nearly as strong. They are still very strong in energy imports, especially they and India are neck and neck with being the two biggest buyers of Russian oil right now, and they are letting refined product go substantially. And back on the bean side of the equation, we're not seeing any cutback in Brazilian shipments or exports into China when it comes to soybeans. Month after month, they seem to be doing very, very well. And so China's demand side, I think, is there. And that's why I think probably 80% of it is just cheaper product or a substitute that they can go after.
Let's stay with Brazil or South America for just a bit. A couple of items that I do want to cover there. One of them is the new wheat crop in Argentina. We'll get to that. Planting looks like it might be in better condition, certainly than it had been in previous years. The other is the bird flu making its way into a country which has been the primary exporter, if I remember correctly, of poultry to the world marketplace. What difference will this make? Because bird flu can really quickly decimate a flock.
Now, that's a very good point, and you're right. They are a major poultry exporter, especially into other parts of Latin America and Asia. The first thing I think about when I think about an expansion of bird flu in a region like Brazil is their beef exports, because they have really taken on a lot bigger role as a beef exporter and competitor to us. And I think it could really help our beef exports, because our high prices are probably distracting or turning away some export business already. And if we go even higher in retail beef prices and wholesale beef prices, then we'll see, I think, even more loss of exports and a higher chance of imports. Well, Brazil could unwind that ball of twine by just having a substantial bird flu epidemic, and I think that's something to definitely watch. On the feed side, I'm not sure it will influence us too much, because I think one thing before the bird flu I'm going to watch is what happens the next 10 to 14 days in the safrinha corn provinces of Mato Grosso and Paraná. They make up about 50% of all of Brazil's production. They are by far the biggest safrinha corn producers, and I think they are entering a time period of hot, dry weather on a crop that was late planted, and it could spell a real problem for them in terms of a mini Argentina type situation if the weather comes at the wrong time. And it looks like by both models, both major weather models, that we're looking at a substantial probability that those two provinces are going to deal with very hot and very dry weather. I want to see how this market in corn especially reacts to that.
Just a clarifying point on the bird flu and the impact it can have. For instance, here in the United States, many will remember the price of eggs was so very high last year and through the bulk of the calendar year. not a logistics issue or COVID related. That was really bird flu within the laying flocks. And USDA warned us in late March, early April of last year that that was actually going to be the case. Let's stay in South America. I do want to talk about the movement of grain and oil seeds within the country, the continent itself. How much soybeans going across the borders into Argentina, and does that get exported, and can we track it very well, and does it make a difference at all, or do we just know what the balance sheets are and it's the world supplies or the world supplies?
No, this is a confounding issue, and because A, we don't know exactly what is available for re-export out of Argentina. We hear that they have a substantial amount of old crop corn and beans. Farmers are not selling. That makes perfect sense. Why? Because of their inflation. And their inflation is literally out of control at this point. Every day I look at an Argentine currency chart, and it just continues to drop against the U.S. dollar. They're running close to 300% inflation. And so that's impacting us in a variety of ways. It's actually making their goods go down with our goods in terms of corn price and soybean prices, because they are attached essentially to the U.S. dollar by default because of the way they're structured with the IMF. And so my mindset is that Argentina will have to hold on to as much domestic supplies as they can, because their farmers, A, aren't selling, and their inflation is out of control. So whatever Brazil sends them, I think they will remain probably a net importer this year. The BAGE grain exchange in Buenos Aires just got done taking their soybean crop down again. They're 6 million tons less than USDA's number last week.
Let's turn your attention to wheat. Start with Argentina. Recap what happened or didn't really happen with their wheat crop last year, I suppose. Talk about prospects for this year. And then can you put it in context with the hard red winter wheat in the United States and the wheat crop across the Northern Hemisphere, which is by far the larger of the two hemispheric wheat crops. Southern Hemisphere doesn't produce nearly as much as wheat as the Northern Hemisphere does.
Yeah, it's interesting that we're talking about a bigger wheat crop in Argentina, because they're coming off of a historic drought. They're still in it. It's improved a little bit, but we're also talking about El Nino returning, and that tends to really hurt the Asian Southern Hemisphere crops of Australia, Indonesia, and India. And I think that that has a probability, maybe a possibility, of coming in and impacting the Argentine and Brazilian crop as well, depending on how strong of an El Nino it becomes. My suspicion is the trade since the WASDE report, in part why we're going down so hard right now, is not necessarily the Black Sea grain deal, not necessarily having factored in the quality tour that just wrapped up today or wrapped up on Thursday afternoon. I think it really does go back to, after the WASDE report, the funds see a replenishment of supplies, starting with wheat, and that's where we have to make, in my mind, a low in wheat first. It's fallen the most since the highs, and it's the one that the trade believes is the most available in terms of supplies coming online, and it's also the biggest competitor out there for feed when it comes to the corn side of the equation. So this 595 area in soft red wheat is a major support level. That would be the April low, the 200-month moving average. I really want to see us stay well above $6 by the time we come into Friday's close.
I might be grasping for straws here, but related to vegetable oil production, El Nino, in the if it's impacting Indonesia, would that mean that the palm oil might be in potential issue once we get to August?
I think that's a very strong probability, Todd, if we do develop a strong El Nino, because that does seem to be very highly correlated to their production in that part of the world. I just saw a Newswire blurb. I think it was from the head of CHS, if I remember right, or one of the top of officials at CHS, talking about how even with conversion of current plants, aviation biofuel is still not, the demand is still not likely to be met in terms of the available supply versus the demand we need to have in the next 2 years. So I do think bean oil, especially if crude oil can make a low, because the global economy returns to at least a par, or it doesn't lose any more ground led by China or the United States, I think the bean oil could be on the short list for a major low as well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. He and Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net from Barrington, Illinois, joined us on this May 18 edition of Commodity Week. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. We're online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.